Well, you talk about time acceleration. This program's really going by quickly. We'll be back in a moment. Final hour with Barbara Hand Clow and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Barbara, awakening the world mind. How do we do that? With programs like this, or is there something else out there?
Definitely with programs like this. And I don't think we should underestimate what happens when people start thinking more in a group mentality. Like one of the things going on with working with time acceleration is becoming aware of the various phases of it. Like, for example, during 2008, tuning into the past periods that relate to this period. And when a lot of people start having the same thoughts and start thinking along the same lines, I actually think it has quite a big impact.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
Westminster, Colorado.
All right, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Have you ever considered the verses in Isaiah chapter 24, verse 1, and then in 24, verse 21?
I've considered Isaiah very carefully, but I haven't memorized the verses.
All right, here's what I want to point out. The calendar today that we take for granted is based upon the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. In Isaiah chapter 24, 1, it talks about the earth in the latter days being turned upside down. In verse 21, it talks about the earth wobbling to and fro like a drunkard. And it talks about the devastation that it would cause on the inhabitants of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you put two factors together. You were talking about a huge potential solar flare.
Mm-hmm.
And in chapter 30 of Isaiah, it talks about the sun going seven times brighter than it normally does.
Isn't that fascinating?
And that would tend to indicate a solar flare condition that may affect the rotation of the earth.
Yeah.
And if that earth flips, as is described in chapter 24, you might get a magnetic a switch as well, besides the geographical switch, and you might have the sun then coming up in the west and setting in the east. Now, you can imagine that if the earth shifts fairly rapidly, you're going to get tidal basins coming out of the oceans that are causing tsunamis that nobody ever dreamed of.
That's right.
So your coastal areas would be affected, which is one of the things Jesus forecast in the Gospels about that there would be problems with people living on the coastland. Woe unto them that live on the coastlands for the perplexing tides. So what I'm going to suggest is if that happens, not only do you have the disasters, but you'd have to have a realignment of satellites if any of them survived the solar hit to begin with. And then you would have your Earth's electrical grids would essentially be offline for a time. And everybody would be, depending on whatever wisdom they had stored anything away, to survive until they could get the power back online because of polarity changes.
Right.
So this is something that I thought maybe you might want to consider with everything. The other thing I'd like to say to you, it's nice to see a woman with a spine in regard to what you said about the Bush Empire collapsing.
Right, right. Do you think Colorado is a good place to be, considering what you're worried about?
Well, I'm not worried about it. That's why I'm in Colorado. So.
Oh, okay. You're in Colorado, so you don't have to worry about that. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, right on the water.
Well, let's go to the international line then, Barbara. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Rick in Toronto.
Hey, Rick. Go ahead.
I believe I can put a lot of this together. You know, this is sort of like a jigsaw puzzle that has come together for me. I mean, you talk about world peace. You talk about the fall of the American empire, quote unquote. Well, the only way you're going to get world peace is if all nation states cease to exist. And the only way that would happen is a worldwide cataclysm, such as a instant freeze.
An instant freeze.
2012, putting together the fact that, well, not the fact, but the hypothesis that Planet X will enter our solar system.
Oh, I see. Like the mammoths, when they got hit.
And see,
sure.
This is why I wrote Catastrophobia, okay, back in 2001. Because I'm also, I've also, in my time, been a healer and been a therapist. And what I found in people when I went deep inside them was always this overwhelming terror, whether it's going to be a polar shift or whether it's going to be a big solar flare or whether it's going to be the big freeze. And meanwhile, I actually believe that what's going on with people, possibly including yourself, is you have things inside yourself that you haven't processed. And personally, I'm not sitting around worrying about the big freeze in 2012.
Let's go now to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi, this is Matt in Tucson.
Okay, Matt, go ahead.
I was going to ask about the polar axis shift, if there was anything specific in what Mayans are saying, but also being half Native and then, you know, having a girlfriend who's Native American, there are many secrets that, you know, the shamans or the tribe might keep. I was wondering if you knew of any Mayan secrets that they're keeping. Is there anything they're not telling us, or have you been privy to that information?
I'm pretty well privy to a lot of the information, both in the Cherokee and in the Mayan tradition. And we definitely have been very, very careful about what we've been revealing through time. And when the Pleiadian agenda was channeled by me in 1994 and 1995, one of the things that came through from the Pleiadians is that we live in a world, in a universe where we have nine dimensions of consciousness, but that we only tune into one dimension, which is the third dimension, which is linear space and time. And what the Pleiadians said is the Pleiadians said there's a keeper of each tradition. Well, when they came through with that, I had a real problem. I had to go to my elders and go into council with them because as a child I'd been taught to never mention the keepers. And so my elders told me back in 1994 that when the comet Shoemaker-Levy hit Jupiter, the fragments of comet Shoemaker-Levy, that what happened was the keeper tradition at that point was released, and I was in a position at that point to go ahead and write about that, which I did. Now, the important piece of information in that tradition is that the keeper of the third dimension is our species, is human beings. And the issue coming from the Cherokee tradition is that we are really lousy keepers at this point. In other words, when you're a keeper of a dimension, your responsibility is to keep it in form. And so the keepers of our dimension would be responsible for keeping life in form.
Hey, Barbara, when you talk about humanity as healing itself, tell me how we're doing that.
Well, first of all, in your time and in my time, there's been a tremendous rise in the alternative healing movement, which has a lot to do with a lot of body therapies and psychological therapies in order for people to get into the deep inner contents of their consciousness. For example, Jungian analysis only in the last 100 years. And so I think if you project yourself back 200 or 300 years, you will find people are, except for indigenous people, you'll find Western people are really very blocked and very rigid. And as we come into the 20th century, people have started to work on themselves and heal themselves. And this is getting to be a bigger and bigger movement all the time, which is another one of the things that I see as being very positive.
Okay, let's go next to our wild card line. Hi there. Thanks for holding.
Hello, George.
Hello.
Hi, Barb.
Hi.
How you doing? I commend you on your timelines and everything. You've done a phenomenal job. Back in, I think it was 86 or 87, at the first convergence,
yep.
I had a, kind of a revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely correct on the 2008 date.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there will be absolute peace on the earth. In 2012 will be the great, what is it? Great and dreadful day of the Lord. What do they call that? The judgment day.
Mm-hmm.
That will be the judgment day, and it will affect each individual person as he creates his own reality. And it will affect his bodily functions.
Mm-hmm. And the issue is to come from the heart, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what we're learning. Speaking to solar flares, can you imagine what massive solar flares could do to the heart chakra itself?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and we don't really, you know, we've all lived with solar flares. At least in my case, I'm almost 65, so I've been living with them, and I'm really sensitive to them. Boy, oh, boy, they really affect me. And I'm not, and from that point of view, I'm not looking forward to this. But on the other hand, what I've noticed is they really, really heighten my consciousness.
Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Chris in Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, Chris. Thank you.
Yes,
hi, Chris.
I wanted to commend you on your Cherokee grandfather there and my family's Cherokee. Also, I wanted to run this by you. What do you know of the white buffalo woman in the porthole of time? I was taught that she would appear to us Indian people and open up the porthole of time, would step through, and basically would get the land back. Might be wrong because it was handed down to me years ago. But is there anything in the Mayan culture and the Cherokee culture that match on that?
Well, in all sacred traditions, the issue of the feminine coming forth at this point is always a critical issue. In fact, if you want to look at the issues of the global elite and the dominant controllers, if you watch them closely, they're using all of their energy and money and power to keep the feminine, retarded. Because if the feminine energy actually does awaken on this planet, as I believe in Native cultures, it has been very awakened. And then if we go back like 10,000 years, 5,000 years, I think we also see a much more feminine planet. And the Earth itself, in my tradition, is feminine. And so the keepers of the Earth actually need to be the feminine principle. This isn't just women. This is also men with a strong feminine side. And so I think that the white buffalo tradition has to do with the return and awakening of the feminine, which I think is just critical at this point. I'm really kind of happy that I'm in a female body this time, because I've actually been accepted at fairly scientific levels, and I've been accepted for my teaching. And I think it's good that a woman, does what I do at this point in time.
Tell us a little bit more about the Pleiadian connection with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on that one, George, I first of all was taught as a child that was my source. That's where it came from. And the Pleiadians started communicating directly to me when I was only 8 months old. So the first thing you'd have to say is, well, how do I know that? Well, another part of my research is a book called The Mind Chronicles Trilogy. And The Mind Chronicles Trilogy is based on 100 sessions under hypnosis that I did into my own past lives. And so when I did the session work, often the regression therapist would take me back to my childhood. And so one time in one of my sessions, the therapist took me back to being 8 months old when I first got in touch with the Pleiades.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with us. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Ron in Rockford, Illinois, WROK.
Of course. Thank you, Ron.
And I have a kind of a two-part question. My sister gave me a book, The Promise by Fred Bell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it goes through Palladians and George has interviewed a person from Germany. I think his name is Meyer or Mayer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Billy Meyer?
Billy Meyer.
Okay. Billy Meyer.
Yeah.
And in the book, The Promise, there's a picture of like a female astronaut, mm-hmm. or alien, and Sim Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And this other guy, Meyer, has the same picture that was on the website after George interviewed him. And I guess my question is, do they just go all over, or do they have spots where they have, you know, in other words, do they go like military spots, or do they go all over the world?
They're all over the world. Yeah, they're all over the world as far as I know. I've only seen them twice in my life. I mean, I'm in touch with them verbally, but I've only seen them twice. And for me, what they look like is they look like Casper the Ghost almost. They look like they were about 2 feet tall, and they look like they were made out of electromagnetic blue light. So I didn't see them as a figure like Billy Meyer did. I just saw these electromagnetic forms.
Were they robots?
No, they weren't robots. They were just like electromagnetic light, like blue light. And one time, they appeared twice, once just for a few minutes. But one other time, they appeared in my office, and they stayed there for about 4 or 5 hours.
Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Melanie from San Diego.
Go ahead, Melanie.
Hi. My first question is about the calendar itself. I was in Cabo San Lucas for a transformational breathwork seminar, and a gal there had the calendar, and she put my birth date into it, and it was in Spanish, so I could not, and she could not translate it, but she said my birthday came up saying bridge between worlds, and I was wondering, what does that mean?
Well, I'm not sure, and you also might be referring to the dream spell system by Jose Arguelles.
I don't know. She just
had
this.
Yeah, because there's a couple of systems, and that one sounds like that's Dream Spell by Jose Arguelles, which is a very interesting system, but it's not the same as the original calendar. You're going to have to get more information on your own. You're going to have to find out more about exactly what. You can look up your own day sign and stuff like that. There are different systems for doing that. My book, The Mayan Code, has an appendix with a system for doing that. So you're just going to have to look up your birth date and all that and figure it out.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning? Calling from Indianapolis.
Sure thing.
You talked earlier, Barbara, about 2008 being a bad year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious to see what maybe a couple predictions you have as why you think it's going to be bad.
Well, first of all, you should really be taking the whole housing crisis and liquidity crisis seriously. In other words, whatever you can do to get rid of debt and stuff like that and to be as free as possible is a really, really good idea. And then the other thing that is probably going to happen is a lot of stress in society, just basic, you know, bottom-level stress, more homeless people, more issues with issues with crime and stuff like that. And it's just the kind of year where you really got to be strong and you've got to be prepared to take care of yourself. Like, what else would you like to ask?
Will it be a good year, Barbara, overall for people?
Well, the interesting thing is what I'm finding with it personally is if you're a strong person and you've already done a lot of work on yourself, I'm actually finding it to be a very, very beautiful experience. It's already started, by the way. According to the calendar, it actually started in mid-November. And if you I'm old enough to have known people who went through the Depression. And when I was a little girl, they used to talk to me about the Depression. And to a person, they would always talk about how close people were and how families got back together and how friends helped each other. And they got rid of a lot of the alienation they'd been experiencing before that happened. So going through difficult times is not necessarily a totally negative thing.
No, that's true. But
it brings out strength in us, too, you know?
Well, you know, with the old saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Well, but also, I'm finding that people are helping people. I'm seeing this, especially where I live in Canada.
People are reaching out, you know. I'm seeing people, though, spaced out, zoned out.
Yes, yes.
So what's causing that?
Basically, legal drugs. I mean, really, the number of people who are on one drug or two or three, I've noticed for about the last 10 or 15 years that people are very spaced out.
Are you a chemtrail believer that they're dumping stuff on us?
I noticed that a couple of years ago, and I haven't been noticing as much. About 5-10 years ago, I could see them all the time.
No, they're everywhere. They're like tic-tac-toe boards up there.
Yeah,
in the
I'm sky. Not seeing it. Well, first of all, I'm up in Canada at this point, and I used to live in the States, and that's when I used to see it. I guess you're still having them down there like crazy. We're not seeing them
sure.
up here.
Yeah. All right, Barbara, stick around. We're going to come right back with final phone calls. I'm George Norrie. We will be right back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to take two vacation days, Thursday, Friday, John Wells filling in on Thursday, Ian Punnett on Friday. Then I'll be back with you with that live Christmas Eve program right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Barbara, what's the favorite aspect of your book, The Mayan Code? What do you like the best there?
Well, you know, after going through all of the code and the systems and all that, and you can tell it's fairly detailed work, Chapter 8 is called Christ and the Cosmos. And I finally was able to get into the issue of some of the ways that human evolution might actually be functioning. And the most fascinating part of that was to get into the issue of soul involution and how angelic levels of consciousness come into the human evolutionary pattern. In other words, the idea would be that, like, angels would actually come into human form in order to move us along, so to speak. And the reason I'm so fascinated with that is the issue of the indigo children, and you've probably heard about this, the whole issue,
oh, sure.
The idea that for about the last 15 or 20 years that the children are really different. Now, in my case, I'm the mother of four, and so I've watched kids grow up for a long, long time, and I can tell you for sure that the kids are different at this point. There's just something going on with those kids. And so when I get down and out and feel like we're not going to make it, I just check out the kids. And the kids are just of such a high spiritual consciousness. And another thing going on with those kids is it's very hard for the parents. I've noticed the parents are having a really hard time raising them because they're so unusual. But I really feel like the kids are a sign of where we're probably going.
Okay, let's go to the final calls now. We'll pick it up, first of all, by going to our international line. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. Hey, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi, this is Gerald calling. I'd like to get a better sense of what you see daily life being like in 2013. So, you know, will we still be using money? You know, will consumerism still be driving the economy? Will education be the same? You know, or will it be something more like you talked about angelic structures moving in? Will that shift things?
Mm-hmm.
Very dramatically.
Yeah, it's a very, very hard thing to answer, as you can imagine. And the closest I can come to it is that, as you probably know from physics and science, basically, we are beings of, what we really are is we're frequency receptors. Like our brains are frequency receptors and our bodies are frequency receptors. And what has happened to us, as far as I can tell, because of the cataclysm 11,500 years ago, is we have separated ourselves out from the flow of the frequencies in nature itself. In other words, we've gone into like a process of being separated and kind of divided. And I think as we move into 2011, 2012, I think what's going to happen is we are going to start to flow with the frequencies again. And then regarding whether we are going to have cars and money and buildings and all that kind of stuff, certainly for a long, long time we're going to have things like that because we're going to go through periods of transformation. I don't think things are just going to melt, if you know what I mean. But I do think that the best word for what's going to happen would be that we're going to start dematerializing. We're going to start not having as much stuff and as much junk, and we're going to start, you know, we're not going to use as much energy. And that's about the best answer I can give because the level of change that's coming is so extreme that it's really hard to imagine it from our point of view at this time.
Will this be a world of the haves and the have-nots?
I think that's going to change too, George. I think we're just living with a whole bunch of stuff that's very, very old, that's coming from a lot of old conflicts, and I think it's going to change.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. My name is Wolf. I'm calling from Phoenix.
And
yes, that is my name.
Okay.
I'd like to make a couple of quick comments, if I may, and then I have
sure,
a question.
Wolf. Okay.
Well, first of all, I'm a follower of the ancient tradition. You might call it the old religion. I can tell you, Barbara, that the divine feminine is not only back. She's known as the white goddess in Western Europe, but she's also the white buffalo cow woman. If you know her, you'll understand by that basically... if you know her, you recognize her in her incarnations. I'd like to mention here, you're talking about the spiral. If you look at the spiral markings on the New Grange mounds, which are basically an Irish pyramid, operating in the same principle as the Egyptian pyramid, you will see that the spirals don't just spiral around until they reach a center. At the center, they turn back upon themselves, go from clockwise to counterclockwise and kind of unwind themselves and then move into another cycle, another spiral. So as things are speeding up towards 2012 and the way you've described, as the frequencies shorten, they should begin to unwind, according to the ancients' understanding.
Yeah, and I think that's more like that unwinding starts in 2011, 2012. Uh-huh. And I tried to work with that on a more scientific level in Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, which came out in 2004. And what I went into regarding that particular issue, and I'm very familiar with Newgrange, and I know exactly what you mean, and uh-huh. it's a great image for what we're trying to express here.
Right.
What I went to was the a book by Ishtok Bentov called Stalking the Wild Pendulum, uh-huh. which I think is one of the best books that we have regarding, making it possible for us to understand physics at a fairly simple level. And what Ishtok Bentov says is that what happens is that we go into the black hole, and we reach that point in the black hole, which is like a nexus point, and then when we come out the other side of it, we come out into a white hole, which is an entirely new universe. And a lot of other scientists, like James N. Garner, who's the author of Biocosmos, a lot of scientists are starting to think this way in terms of this movement into a nexus point and then a complete reversal and movement into another level. And I'm really glad that you brought some of this stuff up, because I think you're doing a better job of imaging what might happen in 2013 than I am, you know? Yeah, it's like one of the reasons I love to talk to people is that I don't understand everything and I can't explain everything. And sometimes if I put an idea out, somebody will come back with an idea that's a lot better than mine.
Let's go back to the calls. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, it's Larry.
Hello, Larry, go ahead.
Hey, can I ask if there's going to be an email address for Barbara at the end of the show?
No.
Okay. No email.
I'd get buried. You got to go to HandCloud 2012, because what I do on HandCloud2012.com is I'm speaking to people month by month by month, but I couldn't possibly get all this research done if you could actually reach right through to me. It won't work.
Next question. Do you know what intuitive means?
Sure.
You know what digital child means?
Yeah.
Ever met one?
A digital child or a magical child?
Digital child.
A digital child.
Mm-hmm.
No. What is a digital child?
I have no idea. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
How's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Question of, with astrology, I'm curious how you use it to predict the Mayan, or how you compare basically, I have a problem with astrology. In its heyday, the Earth was the center of the universe. And we didn't discover the billions of galaxies and stars until the past 100 years. So astrology, to me, is kind of an inaccurate tool for measurement or predictions. And so how can you use it to confirm some of the Mayan calendar predictions?
Okay, so this is a good question. So first of all, if you study astrology at a much higher level, you will find, if you go back thousands of years, that people actually knew a lot about the solar system itself and even the galaxy. But that's like a whole subject in itself. Astrology is not as undeveloped as you might think it is. And so the basic premise of astrology is that human beings, that the behavior of human beings is affected by the location of the planets and the aspects between the planets. And so where I used astrology in this book is in only one way. First of all, this is a book about Kalaman's research and the Mayan calendar. And by the way, Dr. Kalaman doesn't put any value on astrology whatsoever. He's not interested in it at all. But what Kalaman is saying in his research is he's describing this evolutionary ascension and acceleration up through 2011. And so in my universe, what he's saying because of this time acceleration, we're going to go to this amazing level of consciousness in 2011, 2012. That's his basic premise. And so for me as an astrologer, I would have to see planetary aspects that showed that that's possible, because so far in my experience as an astrologer, I can see how much the planets influence people. So the only way in which astrology has anything to do with the Mayan code is just as a test of Kalaman's theory.
Let's go to our next wild card line. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hello, is this number three?
I think it may be you. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, this is John. I'm calling for Barbara and you, George.
Okay, John.
From upstate New York.
Hi, John.
Hi. It's a delight to talk with you. I thought I knew what I wanted to say, but every 5 minutes you say something new. I wouldn't be surprised if we were in SDS together in October 1997. And I was about ready to turn off this program saying, oh, no, another one. And then you mentioned Jose Arguelles, and I should, so I don't even know. First of all, I had initially wanted to ask you what you know about walk-ins.
You want to ask that, okay, as the first question. Okay, as far as I can tell, now for years as an astrologer, I was a psychological astrologer. I was a counselor. And there does seem to be a certain number of people who seem to have a new consciousness walk into them. And when you examine them and discuss it with them and all that, it really does seem to be a true thing. And so I don't know what else to say about it. I can make a comment about myself, which is in this lifetime I have a dual identity. I actually am living out a life on the planet Earth, and I'm also living out a life on Alcyon in the Pleiades. And this has been the way my life has been from the beginning. And whenever I do anything here, they know about it in Alcyon. And whenever I do anything on Alcyon, they know about it on the Earth. And that's probably as close as I can come personally to the issue of a walk-in.
I feel an understanding with what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I just seem to have inadvertently have been placed on a path, and as long as I don't try to do things my way, I'm doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
I was an engineer, and that's the way I approached life. When I would do that now, nothing seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
When I just do things and do it intuitively and go on what I call autopilot,
mm-hmm.
things seem to work.
And if I can say something, I think this is what you just expressed is a big part of the new consciousness. Because, of course, as a teacher, I teach, you know, a couple of thousand students a year, and I keep close eye on them, you know. And I can see that the people who are going on autopilot and just allowing themselves to follow synchronicity and to follow their feelings are actually doing quite well right now.
All right, Barbara, if you were with the Mayan calendar makers a long, long time ago, what would you be asking them?
Boy, I'd be asking them where they got this idea. Because there's a stele in Koba, which was carved in 700 AD, which is 1,300 years ago, that describes 16.4 billion years of evolution. It has a very minute breaking down of the mammalian evolutionary cycle over 800 million years. Where did they get that information?
And again, what if he said, I just ran out of rock to make the rest of the calendars?
But you know what I mean? I really, really wonder where on earth did they get that information? And so in Christ and the Cosmos, Chapter 8 in the Mayan Code, the reason I got into soul involution is because of a British researcher named Ian Lawton, who has written a book called Genesis Unveiled, and which actually is going to be published in the States in a few years. And what Ian Lawton got into was he did a really, really nice piece of research trying to figure out whether the Paleolithic people and whether the really early people actually knew about evolution. Did they know about monkeys? And did they know about hominids and all that kind of stuff? And he actually found a lot of evidence for the possibility that ancient humans actually have understood evolution, which is really a fascinating idea.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Go ahead, take it away.
Hi, this is Margaret in Arizona.
Okay, Margaret.
And I just wanted to say, wow, synchronicity, so much of what you have said has just tied loose ends for me together. My question is a weird thing happened this morning, is my daughter is sleep-deprived, and she talks in her sleep anyway, and she has finals, and I could not wake her up this morning. And one of the things that she said when she was trying to get her to wake up was something about protecting the magnetic field. Now, I have a kid who doesn't believe in any of this stuff that I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if there is something that we should be doing in terms of protecting our own magnetic field you know, I had the sense, you know, I thought about it later, and I thought maybe she was kind of channeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is really interesting because, as you know, from a scientific point of view, there is nothing at the current moment that world scientists can do about this, okay, in terms of the magnetic field dropping at this current moment. There's nothing. But what if the magnetic field of the heart, which is like a torus-like system that we all have that radiates out into the field around us, what if the magnetic field of the heart actually affects the magnetic field of the planet, which I think is a real possibility? And so what if we're moving to kind of a meeting point between the magnetic field of the planet and the magnetic field of the heart? And that's really all I can say, because I think it's fascinating that your daughter would say something like that.
Well, all we know, Barbara, is if this occurs the way a lot of us have speculated, it's going to be a pretty fascinating time period for all of us, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm also enjoying living, obviously you can tell from talking to me, living in the middle of it. Now, in my case, George, speaking of being a trained as a child by my Cherokee grandfather gave me this legacy, which had to do with the geological cycles, that had to do with the time cycles and the evolution of our planet. And my grandfather trained me in this legacy from age 3 to age 17. And he was not easy. He actually had an oak chair that I had to sit in. And whenever I told him I couldn't stand it anymore, I had to sit in that chair and say, never say I can't, 100 times. I still have that chair. And so I was given a very hard legacy to pass on. And he passed it, by the way, to me instead of my grandfather had 5 children, and one of them was my father. And he passed it to my generation because he knew that my father would not be alive at this point in order to convey this information. And so I'm kind of in a state of ecstasy at this point because finally this legacy is being given to the planet.
Well, Barbara, good job on the book, The Mayan Code, and we'll talk to you as we get closer. I'm going to put together a roundtable that night. It'll be Friday night, December 21st, 2012. You want to be on the program?
Of course.
All right. We'll count you in, Barbara. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. And again, I'm taking 2 days off. I'll be back on Christmas Eve for you. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.